Thank you, and good afternoon. As we say, definitely something easier than OCI, it's leases. It's agenda papers 3 that you've got in front of you. I think as you're probably all aware, we relatively recently published Exposure Draft on Leases, the second Exposure Draft, and we're now in, we're almost a month into our 120-day comment period. And clearly we are very keen to get your views back today. And the paper topic that we put here really obviously gets at the crux of every project the IFB does. We are always needing to assess whether the costs outweigh the benefits, and we wanted to make that kind of the title and the focus of the conversation today, given that we had the user community and the preparer community together in the one meeting. What the paper does is focus on, at a high level, sort of the three main areas, I suppose we'd say. And sorry, just to clarify, obviously it's focusing only on lessee accounting. There clearly are some changes proposed to lessor accounting, but that's not the topic for discussion today. So it's lessee accounting, talking about changes to the balance sheet, changes to the income statement, and then note disclosures. The paper that we prepared obviously is pretty brief and doesn't have so much there, and we preferred, rather than regurging and including lots of stuff in the paper, we just refer you across to other information that is there, so the snapshot and the effects analysis that's included as part of the exposure draft. As you go off now to discuss in breakout groups, I'll just quickly go through, I suppose, each of the questions. So I suppose, first of all, question one is sitting on page 3, asking about the balance sheet. Do you agree that leases create assets and liabilities? And if so, should they be reported on the balance sheet? And obviously there, it's the same question we've asked you all, but obviously we'll be particularly interested in hearing about the cost side from preparers, and particularly interested in the benefits side from the investors and analysts. One thing I have tried to draw out in the question is obviously in terms of the measurement of the assets and liabilities, this has changed quite dramatically from the first exposure draft. The boards obviously previously proposed that there would be all kinds of estimations of of expected contingent rentals based on future sales, expectations of whether you think you would extend a lease or not. That's been very much simplified based on the feedback that the board's received in response to the previous exposure draft. But then this question about do you agree these things should be reported on the balance sheet is clearly made in the context of those changes in the measurement proposals. You know, so do you agree there is really a benefit if operating leases will now be on the balance sheet and will be measured to reflect the contractual commitments, but won't include any variable lease payments linked to sales or use, and often won't include any payments that are optional that appear in extension periods. So that's question one. Question two, or pages 5 and 6, is talking about the income statement. Now, this is an area, again, that has clearly changed from the previous exposure draft. And the boards are now proposing a dual approach in the income statement. So whilst for all leases more than 12 months, there will be an asset and liability, right of use asset or lease liability, that will flow through in a different way in the income statement depending on whether the underlying, pretty much depending on whether the underlying asset is real estate or something other than real estate. Now, the background and the rationale for that is really linked about thinking about sort of pricing of the contract and the nature of what you're leasing. And essentially, the rationale is that if you think about most assets that are depreciating assets, and clearly most equipment and vehicles, when they depreciate, they often depreciate faster in the early part of their life than they do in the later part. We'd say, and my example, we'll take our usual 8-year aircraft lease or a 5-year truck lease. that if you think about the pricing of that contract, that whenever a lessee is paying for its five-year truck lease, the payments, a lot of the payments will effectively represent the fact that he's going to consume quite a bit of the value of the truck over that five-year period. You know, the truck from the start of the lease to the end of the lease will decline quite a lot in value. The lessor will clearly want recovery for that. So when the lessee's making payments for that, quite a chunk of the lease payments will represent the amount of that truck that he's consuming, which would flow through his amortization, and also clearly he's paying over time, so there's a financing and interest element there. And that means that what happens in the income statement is that amortization will flow through from the asset and interest will flow through from the liability. So you're really saying when you enter into a lease of a truck or an aircraft, the lessee is really kind of acquiring a piece of that underlying asset, and you should flow through the accounting as if you had actually acquired the underlying asset and were paying for it over time. In contrast, for most real estate leases, and we take our three-year retail unit lease, we're saying, well, look, over that three-year period, let's assume, you know, the obviously building and the land underneath it has a much longer life, the land potentially indefinitely. That when the lessor is pricing that, he's probably hoping and presuming that not only will the value of the property not decline over the 3 years, but he may even hope that it'll increase. And therefore, the way that's priced, when the lessee's making payments for that three-year retail unit lease, almost all of those payments are effectively just rent for use of the building. They don't essentially encapsulate any amount of the building that's getting consumed. So because of that, we say that all of the amount being paid effectively represents kind of rent for use. It's all one amount. And that would flow through the income statement as one amount, as lease expense, and be recognised on a straight line basis. Now what that means then is that if you think about anybody that leases a lot of equipment or vehicle leases, so the airlines are a good example, any transport companies, they're going to see a change in their balance sheet, their income statement, and their cash flow statement. Whereas if you're somebody like a retailer who predominantly leases real estate, there's just going to be a change in the balance sheet, but the income statement and the cash flow statement won't necessarily change. So clearly the question here feeds off your views around that dual approach. Do you think it's going to provide more useful information? Because it clearly adds some more complexity to the proposals than if there was just a single model. Now, when you're talking about this, in particular, I'd like both preparers and the users to think about the real estate leases and particularly about the kind of ratio analysis that might flow through from what's being proposed to the balance sheet and income statement. And I suppose it's just in thinking about, say, a retailer, where you can clearly see, and by the way, for some of the retailers, these are big numbers. You know, the amount of debts on the balance sheet could be, I don't know, four or five times their equity. It could be increasing. So it's going to be big changes in the balance sheet, but not necessarily changes in the income statement, cash flow statement. So what that means is if you're just taking reported information and maybe doing an EV/EBIT or EV/EBITDA calculation or any calculations that are obviously picking up, you know, debt numbers or asset numbers in the balance sheet and comparing it, you know, and also picking up earnings numbers in the income statement, there potentially is that issue that, for example, if in the EV calculation you're considering the lease liability to be interest-bearing debt, whereas the EBIT number is not changing because there isn't a piece, you know, of the payment being made being moved below to the interest line, does that create any issues in terms of ratio analysis, or how do you think that you would use the information you'd get as analysts and investors? Now, just three possible things that we thought of to think about, but you may have others in this context. Is if you view that as being a potential issue, that there's potentially debt, interest-bearing debt, going on the balance sheet, and no corresponding interest being presented in the income statement, then do you think it would be better to go back to one model and always have amortization and interest in the income statement? So then you've got interest and interest-bearing debt. So they would all get treated like equipment and vehicle leases. Do you think that perhaps it's still very valuable to have it on the balance sheet, but that you potentially wouldn't treat those lease liabilities for the real estate leases as interest-bearing debt? It would be debt, but not interest-bearing debt. Or do you actually think it might be better if in the income statement the entire lease expense for those real estate leases wasn't actually treated as an operating expense? Now, by the way, in the proposals, we don't say where you'd put that lease expense. We think most people will continue to put it in operating expense. We just say it's a single expense.
But in cash flows, we say.
In cash flows, we say, yeah. So, but in the income statement, based on the proposals, we'd expect it to be entirely an operating expense. But do you actually think potentially it would be better not to have it as part of operating expense, but to actually move it and consider it to be entirely financing? Now, the thought process behind that is if you follow through the logic of why the board's reached this approach to say, in a real estate lease, the vast majority of what you're paying is just rent for use. There isn't any amortization piece there. Then you could view that and say that that's entirely financing. The amount you're paying at rent for use is entirely financing, and therefore you'd move it below EBIT. And that possibly, that last approach possibly would line up more closely with some whole asset thinking that I know we've talked about with some of you before. Now, there may be other things, so I want to leave that with you for your breakout session. And finally, question three, on note disclosures. Just to highlight, I've just on page six just included a high-level overview, but hopefully in the information we've just drawn out the key aspects of this. And the questions for both sides are really around both qualitative and then quantitative. In terms of the qualitative disclosures, I mean, you'll see in our table, the boards are really asking lessees to, you know, give a description about your leasing activities, tell us about all the terms of your variable lease payments, tell us about your options. So at least at this level, it looks like there's quite a lot of qualitative information asked for. In saying that, there's almost exactly the same information asked for today in IS 17 about operating leases. And at least when we've looked at some financial statements, and I must say I'm not commenting on any preparers in the room in terms of their financial statements, but at least some lessees who have a lot of leasing activities, there is very, very limited information today. We've seen one or two that have enormous amounts of operating leases giving two sentences description about their leasing activities. So there's some questions in there for both sides about is there anything that you think the boards can do in that area to improve that without making it overly onerous. The second aspect, of course, is the qualitative piece. I think in the proposals we are asking for quite a lot of qualitative information. There's that roll forward, that reconciliation of opening to closing balances being asked both on the asset side and on the liability side. And similar to property, plant, and equipment, on the asset side, it's asked for by asset class. And I suppose, again, a question for both sides, is that quantitative information particularly useful? And what are the preparers' views on the costs associated with that?
Good. I think we got a good briefing from Petrina. She put her heart and soul into this project. It's really commendable what she has done, and that comes clearly through in her presentation. We will stick to the same groups, although there is some temptation to shuffle the groups given some variety and things, but given that we have only 45 minutes, my request is to please bear with the same board members and please bear with your fellow participants in the group. But we will definitely come back at 4 o'clock here so that we can wrap it up at 5 o'clock. On the thing, in the interest of full disclosure, Vegu and I dissented it, but we will do our best in our respective groups to be as neutral as possible. I know in the previous in the conceptual framework we got into quite a bit of detail because of the emotions that are attached to it. But this one we'll deliberately step back because of the fact that we have publicly have dissented. So we will be as neutral as possible.
Petrina, do you want us to go through everything in each group, or did you want to break out the session?
I think there's obviously 45 minutes and there's three questions. So you could say, I think what I was trying to do with my group was to say, try as
Yeah.
Try as best you can to say maximum for any question 15 minutes. But for example, if you all suddenly within 2 minutes say the balance sheet is brilliant, let's get it on there and it's all wonderful, then you can move straight on to question two after 2 minutes.